Italy's my favorite country. I simply love everything about eating in Italy. And every region, practically every town, boasts its own culinary specialties. For years, I've admired a book called Italy for the Gourmet Traveler. It was a definitive brick of a guide to Italy's regional foods and restaurants compiled and updated by Fred Plotkin. Ever since he was a college student, Fred has spent substantial time every year getting acquainted with the intricacies of Italy and revealing them to the world. We became friends from Fred's appearances on Travel with Rick Steves, so it was only natural for us to co-author a sequel to Fred's classic guide. The recipe was simple: two parts Fred's gourmet expertise, two parts my own easy access approach to eating in Italy, seasoned with an appreciation for how the soul of Italy starts in the kitchen. We've invited Fred in for a closer look at four regions of Italy that have been underappreciated by most travelers and the epicurean pleasures they offer. Fred, welcome back.
My pleasure to be with you.
I just think this partnership has been really fun because you just live and breathe Italian culture and you're an opera aficionado and you speak the language, and I can barely pronounce the names of the dishes on the menu. In fact, I can't pronounce a lot of them, but together we can make fine Italian cuisine accessible to our travelers, and for me that is really, really a mission worth embracing.
I agree. We could have called our book, I'll Have What He's Having.
You know, I'll have what you're having if I'm ever in a restaurant with you, that's for sure. Hey, Fred, our book has three sections, the basics, of course, finding a good restaurant, and a course-by-course coverage of the food. In the appendix, I had so much fun, we listed our favorite restaurants, and it's called Fred's Favorite 50 and Rick's Favorite 50. And the core of the book is a region-by-region rundown covering Italy from the entire boot, from knee to toe, all 20 regions. And, you know, we always seem to talk about, or people in travel and tour guides, you know, talk about the famous places where everybody goes. But you're really into the less famous regions that are less visited and often underappreciated. Let's talk about a few of those in this discussion here.
Yes, because the point is the places that are less visited are less spoiled. They maintain their character.
So, and that's why I think it's worth the trouble to get out there and to remember it's not just how many famous sites are on your bucket list, it's how many regions can you just really become a temporary local in. Let's start off with Sardinia. This is, you know, there's the two big islands there between France and Italy and the Mediterranean, Corsica, that's French, and Sardinia. Sicily's another island, but Sicily's kind of just a stone's throw away from the mainland. Sardinia's really more on its own, isn't it? It's more isolated.
The Italian word for island is isola, I-S-O-L-A, and it's the same root as isolation. In other words, it's really off on its own. And what's particular among many things about Sardinia, they have what's called a blue zone, and this is one of the places in the world where people live the longest. And it's a combination of what they eat, how they live, the quality of life, the clean air. And what people don't know about Sardinia, they assume that it's a seafood place. And it is, because it's an island. However, it's one of the biggest meat-eating regions of Italy, and there are two reasons for that. One is that malaria surrounded the coast until 1950, so people lived inland to stay away from malaria. But number two, conquerors attempted to come to the island and take over Sardinia, so people lived inland in these little dwellings called nuraghi, which are these ancient stone dwellings, and they lived with their sheep. So therefore, the sheep's milk cheeses of Sardinia are just, to me, the best I know anywhere in the world. And there are great ones in Spain and elsewhere in Italy. These are just the best by a long shot. And there are shops where it's nothing but sheep's milk cheese. It's phenomenal.
So pecorino is the word for sheep's cheese, is that right?
Yes, and in fact, people should know that most of the pecorino produced in Tuscany, which is famous, the people came from Sardinia to produce it in Tuscany. Ah. The Sardinians are the experts on this.
So when we think of Sardinia, we're thinking of pastoral, sheep-centric communities, rural communities, and also, I suppose, their heritage, because there's a lot of honey and almonds and nuts. That would be, like in Sicily, the Arabic heritage.
Food that
right?
travels. No, not so much Arabic, Phoenician, but food that travels, because the shepherd could not take fresh bread, so he takes something called pane fratao or pane carasau. This is sort of a crisp bread like you see in Scandinavia or the American West, where bread has to last. And the shepherds would then use oil or water or tomato sauce out in the countryside, grate on pecorino and perhaps a fried egg. And that's a traditional shepherd's meal.
There you go.
You can find it in restaurants in the towns. But I've eaten this surrounded by sheep out in Sardinia. Sardinia, by the way, has fantastic wines. People don't know this. There's a red called Canonau, which they think is part of the secret of long life, that there's something particular in this red wine that is very health-giving. Vermentino is the white. And you mentioned the honey. There's something called abamelle, which is, it's like aged honey that they use as medicine.
I learned from us that when you're talking about the wines, in the book you've included vino de taglio, wine for cutting. It's so rough and heavy. I guess that's its nickname.
Yes. In other words, when a wine gives body. So, for example, southern Italy, Sicily, parts of the south, Sardinia, produce wines that in the past were very heavy because that's what they had. They would be shipped north to places like Piemonte, Lombardy, where the wines were lighter to give a little more substance. Not so much Piemonte, but more Lombardy, to give substance, and also Emilia-Romagna.
Fred Plotkin's on the line from his home in Manhattan as we celebrate the culinary pleasures in the lesser visited parts of Italy on Travel with Rick Steves. Fred co-authored Rick Steves' Italy for Food Lovers with me. It updates his classic Italy for the Gourmet Traveler for each of Italy's 20 regions. And it includes our 100 favorite restaurant recommendations all across the country. There's more at ricksteves.com/radio. Fred, let's travel now to the region north of Venice that snuggles right up there in the corner next to Austrian Slovenia, with the Dolomites on the top and the beaches on the south. What's that?
It's Friuli Venezia Giulia. And to me, this is the great undiscovered region. It's been discovered a bit. About 25 years ago now, I wrote a book of the food of the region called La Terra Fortunata, The Fortunate Land, which was an ironic title, because the region has known war. It was one of the centers of World War I. It suffered in World War II. Hemingway was injured there. Hemingway loved this region. There have been massive earthquakes. There have been all kinds of devastation, invasions from Austria, invasions by Attila the Hun even, destroying Roman civilizations. And yet, it is one of the most remarkable food places I know in the world. And the reason for that is, it uses more spices than any other Italian region. Most Italian food is herbal with some spices, but in Friuli Venezia Giulia, spices enter everything, which doesn't mean that it's spicy and hot. But for example, you could take a piece of veal or pork and use nutmeg in it that gives a very unusual flavor. But then the Friulians, more than anyone else I know in the world, know how to match wines with foods. You don't match it with the protein, in other words, fish or chicken or beef. You match it with the flavoring. So nutmeg goes with Cabernet Franc. And there are so many grape varieties in this region of world-class wines that, for example, they make a Sauvignon Blanc that's different from most, and it goes beautifully with rock shrimp, with eggs, with white asparagus. They know everything. Yeah. My knowledge of food pairing with wine came primarily from this region. My nose, my palate were developed there. And people who are very serious about learning this stuff really need to go and spend time in Friuli Venezia Giulia, which, as you said, it's tiny. It has the Adriatic, so fantastic fish. It has the plains for polenta. It has Prosciutto di San Daniele, the only rival to Parma. It has the Alps with amazing berries and game and all kinds of flavors in this little region, plus amazing wine. There's no other word for it, but amazing wine.
Fred, you talked about its war heritage, as many people have rampaged through there from Attila's time all the way up to the Nazis. Does that, in peaceful times, that means it's a crossroads and that brings in more flavors? You've got the Austrian and the Slavic influence. Does that have anything to do with the cuisine and the spiciness of it relative to other parts of Italy?
It does, because the spice trade, spices were used not only for food flavoring, but preservation of food and as for medicinal purposes. So the people of the region came to use spices, also herbs, but primarily spices, as medicine.
Also, Fred, it's the home of Trieste, which was the Habsburg port on the Mediterranean. And I would imagine that it leaves a little bit of Habsburg heritage, Austrian heritage, like the coffee culture or the cakes and pastries.
I agree with you mostly. I would only argue that Austria got coffee culture from Italy rather than the other way around, and from Turkey.
There you go. I love
Austria. I spent a lot of time in Vienna. But in learning about Friuli Venezia Giulia, I went to cooking school in Vienna to understand the relationship.
Huh.
Trieste was the port for the Austrian Empire from 1361 to 1918. So that is a huge amount of history. And the hams, the Prague ham, Prague being part of the Austrian Empire, was made in Trieste. The Romans brought pork to Trieste. They founded Trieste. And from there, it spread north and east. So a lot of the pork products that we see in the German-speaking countries and the Slavic countries came from Trieste. The wood around Trieste is used to make many of the violins and musical instruments, but also furniture that you see in Vienna.
Fred Plotkin's our guide to eating off the beaten path in Italy right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Fred co-authored the Rick Steves Italy for Food Lovers book to update Italy's regionally based cuisines and attractions. It features photos of what we're talking about and glossaries with the Italian terms that let you enjoy them as well. Fred has a presence on Facebook. There's more at ricksteves.com/radio. Fred, you make me want to travel to Friuli Venezia Giulia, and I really love the description you have in our book about the characteristic osteria. Tell us just very briefly before we travel on the experience you'll have when you go into one of these traditional little salt-of-the-earth restaurants in Osteria.
They put a branch outside to let you know that they're serving. And it's often done when the wine is new, and they will make dishes that are rustic but from right there that match with the wine of the place. So they show off their wine to its best advantage by creating food to go with the wine rather than the other way around.
All right, let's travel south. Now, everybody goes to Tuscany, and everybody goes to Umbria, and everybody goes to Rome. If you were to go from that region to the east until you hit the Adriatic coastline, that region's called Le Marche, like in English, that would be the Marches. What's the heritage of that?
This is a region that's one-third mountain, one-third plain, and one-third coast. You don't get there easily. You have to intend to go there. So it means that it's been hidden away, but it was under the Roman Empire for a very long time and supplied the salt to Rome, supplied a lot of the food products to Rome. And so therefore, Romans were very demanding of quality. Amazing pasta comes from this region, beautiful wines, salt, fish, everything the Romans wanted to consume, they found at high levels of quality in the Marche.
And also when you go inland, you've got a lot of lamb, you've got a spreadable smoked salami. And
Ciauscolo
is Italy's third salami. Prosciutto, right? Some very nice prosciutto.
From Carpegna, but maybe the signature dish is brodetto, which is a fish stew. It's often called a seafood stew. It's really a fish stew. North of Ancona, the capital, it has 13 fishes. South of Ancona, it has 9 fishes.
Wow. Now, for our last stop on our offbeat, underappreciated, less touristy look at eating in our travels through Italy, Fred, take us to Lombardy. This is the region famous for Milano. As you write in our book, there's 4 horizontal bands. You got the Po River, which is fertile fields. You got an industrial plain south of Milan. You've got the Lake District, which is very romantic and people love that. And then you got the Alps. I was hiking around Mont Blanc and I had one night in Italy. We had a beautiful dinner in the Italian town up in the north in the Valley of Aosta. Tell us about the cuisine in Lombard.
Well, the Alps in Lombardy are called the Valtellina. And many people think the greatest current red wines in all of Italy are produced in the Valtellina, not in Tuscany, not in Piedmont, but the Valtellina. Most people acknowledge that the best sparkling wine comes from the west coast of Lake Garda, which is the Lombardy side. The rice cultivation means that you have magnificent risotto throughout the region. But to me, the symbol of Lombardy is the cow. No region produces more varieties of cow's milk cheese than does Lombardy at an incredibly high quality. I think my favorite cheese is Taleggio, which is a creamy cheese from near Bergamo. But Parmigiano is from there, Gorgonzola, Stracchino, Bitto. Endless numbers of wonderful cow's milk cheeses that are produced in the high alpine valleys in the plains. Cremona is the biggest milk town in Italy. So my mouth waters at the prospect of all of this
cheese
and butter.
These are a lot of classic, what I was thinking are Italian, but boy, to eat them in Lombardy makes a lot of sense. And of course, Milan is the big city there, and it acts like it's the capital of Italy if it's not the capital, but it's certainly the capital of fashion and design, where we find Armani and Versace and opera.
And opera, Scala. La Scala, where
and,
I used to work.
Milan has a great food heritage. Talk a little bit about the aperitivo custom that's so popular there.
Milan, we think Campari is from there, and certainly beautiful cafes are from there. Milan always prided itself on, for every church in Rome, there was a bank in Milan. They like to think they're more hardworking than other Italians. They're not. They work very hard, but most Italians work very hard. And the Milanese also play hard, so that after their workday, they'll go out to one of their local bars or cafes and have an aperitivo, have food that might be served by the cafe. And I advise people, don't eat the entire platter of food in front of you, but pick, it goes with the drink. It's not dinner, so to speak. But the quality is so high in things like that, that you would find little fried risotto balls, or you'd find beautiful prosciutto with gorgonzola, combinations that stimulate the palate and make your drink taste better.
Well, if you got all these great examples of the ingredients, if you've got the Armani and the Versace and La Scala, you would think the food would be in the evening dining experiences would be equally rich and elegant. Fred, thank you so much for this tour of Italy to four underappreciated regions. We are in Sardinia, we are in Friuli, Venezia Giulia, La Marche, and last, Lombardy. I'd like to close just with a favorite word of mine, piacere. When I meet somebody, I know to say piacere. That's nice to meet you, I think, when you're just meeting somebody as a polite word. But it's also an important part of your appreciation of Italian cuisine.
And when you say to me piacere, I reply piacere mio, the pleasure is all mine. The pleasure is about savoring, about enjoyment. It's not hedonism. It's about having your senses activated and alert to what you're doing. So it's not mindlessly putting a drink or food in your mouth. It's pausing to really understand what this is doing to you, where it might be from, and how good you feel. And you feel better when you are focused on food, because we're not talking about being fancy or being foodie. We're talking about every mouthful, every sip is a culture.
Wow. So when I shake somebody's hand in Italy and I always say piacere, that's nice to meet you, but it's also, in my mind, I'm so thankful to be able to approach your culture in a sensuous way and take a moment and bring a little understanding and get the most out of this beautiful experience. Piacere.
Piacere mio.
Fred Plotkin's also known for his expertise in opera and classical music and his books Opera 101 and Classical Music 101. Fred hosts conversations with leading people in the arts on the Adagio platform. It's live on Friday afternoons at 2 Eastern Time and archived on YouTube as Fred Plotkin on Fridays. Get a taste of some of Europe's heartiest foods from Belgium. That's next on Travel with Rick Steves.